Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Oh Brother, a podcast about Salford slash Manchester's legendary and much missed musical institution, The Fall. Each week we invite along a guest to chat about their experience and memories of the group. If you're wondering who we are, it's me, Paul Lanley, and my brother Steve, who as you probably know was a member of The Fall for 20 years. You can find us at all the usual suspects, of course, but we're hosted at play.acast.com/s/Oh Brother. Hope you enjoy it. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Oh Brother, a podcast about The Fall. Today we're very delighted, that's me and Steve. Say hello, Steve.
Hello.
All right, oh, don't go mad, will you? Right, we're delighted today to speak to Mr. Ed Blaney, who was part of the band off and on for nigh on 16, 17 years, I think. We'll get to the exact numbers in a bit. So the first thing I want to say to you, Ed, and thanks very much for coming on, I was listening to an interview with you the other day, and you were at pains to kind of point out that you weren't in the band. So do you think that was the reason that it worked so well for you, that you never actually were in the band full time?
Yeah, and any time I kind of stuck my foot in that room, I thought, fuck this. And he knew it. I wasn't putting up with any of that fucking shit in the Zoo.
I thought you played guitar for a while.
I did, yeah, I did. I mean, I wrote quite a bit and co-produced. And steered it all and everything. But as for like being a band member, no, I couldn't. I kind of was, but not in the sense of that's all I did. And you just turned up and
probably for the best.
Yeah.
Hey.
Probably for the best.
So how did you get involved then with Mark?
Well, you remember JR?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Right, who's JR? You don't mean the guy from Dallas, do you?
Definitely not. No, John Rollison from Prestwich. He gave Mark one of my first demos, and it was done with Martin Price from 808 State and Mark Day. He was like on gardening leave from the Mondays at the time, and Mark really liked it, and he offered us a gig. My first ever gig was at the Roadhouse for one of the album launches in 1994.
Right, well, you'd have been about then, Steve.
Then he used to come to my gigs and that, and
so you were around when I was in it then?
Yeah, you would have done that gig then at the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
How was that gig?
The album launch for Light User Syndrome, probably.
Yeah, and then we supported you then, Trigger Happy, we supported you at the Hacienda in 96. You were definitely there for that.
Yes, yeah. Not a great gig, if I remember it right.
Why is that,
so? Well, we blew up your amp, didn't we? We refused your amp, you lent us your amp, and then... I don't think that helped, did it?
I bet that didn't go around very
well. If I can remember, I think that was the first gig without Craig.
Right.
After Craig had gone, and it wasn't very good.
Well, you only had one guitar?
We just got mates and that. And then he said to me, do you want a tour manager? So I said, okay. If as long as my band can have the London gig and a couple of others and the one in Dublin. And he said, yeah. And it went really well. And then the night before Dublin, as usual, he had an argument with the band, or they had an argument with him, and they rang me up just giving me loads of shit, saying, fuck off, we're going back to London, we've had enough. And it was that Unutterable lineup, and it sounded great in the rehearsal room. And I tried my best to say, look, you know, I understand, but they're like grown-up men crying, but they wasn't having it. And then so I had 8 hours to sort it out, and I said to my band, look, we're still going, but we're not playing. You've got 8 hours to learn the set. You're in the fall, and that was it. Fucking as mad as the times you've probably seen and that.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we got on and we didn't get on and stuff like that. And I fucked off, came back, and we had that space. And I was always doing stuff behind the scenes. And then came back as it offered me the management thing then, which I turned him down. And then I said, I'll just do it, you know, pay as you go sort of thing and see how we go.
Right. Like you said, that's probably a good way to do it, isn't it, I think? If you're not reliant on it, it becomes a bit less stressful.
Well, you know, it was, and that money was like, at that time, 2000, when I really got involved, he was skint. It was hard getting gigs, semi-unbookable at the time with promoters. The promoters, it had come right off the rails, but a lot of hard work, and the band was all right.
That was the time to step in, that, wasn't it? Fair play. You got it back on its tracks again, didn't you? Between you?
Yeah. It wasn't easy, but you know, the first thing he did was change the rider. the whiskey's got to go for a start. And he worked with me for quite a lot of it. But effectively, it was kind of bringing 3/4 of my band in and then just working with it. And, you know, he'd tell me to fuck off and all that. You know, get out. You know, you're not in the band and all that. But sometimes, I didn't realise till after they died and that. You know, I used to say, I'm only saying it in front of them. But at the time, it was like, fuck that. No, I mean that, you know.
Yeah.
Talking like that.
So, I read a really good quote from you the other day. It was about you went to see Bob Dylan. And a couple of things. And you rang Mark up and said, I've just seen Bob Dylan. He's in his 70s. You need to sort it out. But what made me laugh was you described Dylan. You said, you go and see Dylan. Went to see him in the 80s and he was crap. And then I went to see him later on and he was absolutely brilliant, but he didn't do any of the songs I wanted him to do. And I thought, that sounds pretty familiar.
you know, like, I mean, I don't really go to gigs, which people find strange. I used to go like the International and that, when that was open.
Yeah.
Seen a few weird bands, Green on Red. And I remember seeing Dylan in 85 or something. And and he's seen it, shit.
Yeah,
couldn't hear now. But I went to this one in Blackpool, and it was completely nothing what anyone expected. And I was pissed after it. I had a drink with loads of people I didn't know, and I thought, "Fuck it," you know. We used to me ring me all hours, and it was genuine though. I said, you know, we weren't like working together much, but I always kept my eye out. And I just said, you know, fucking get your shit together. but he thanked me for it though. He said, "No, you're all right." Then he used to wind me up and go, you know, we'd have a drink and go, how's your mate fucking Bobby doing? How do you do that?
Brilliant. So, the thing we always ask guests, what's the first interaction you had with the Fallen? When did you first see him?
Well, bizarrely, when I was tripping, I was about 15 years old, and it was at Glastonbury, and you was playing on one of the top fields, I can't remember what it, you know, up near the Ealing Fields and that.
What field? What year would that have been, Ned?
That would have been about 84, 85. I was only 15 or something.
You sure it was Glastonbury?
Yeah.
But it can't have been 84 then, because I was in 84 and I certainly never played. I'm sure I didn't.
85, 86.
When did you first play Glastonbury, Steve?
I don't think it was kind of been Glastonbury. I think I've only played Glastonbury once, in the 90s.
Oh, no, sorry. It was the fucking Elephant Fair.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember that.
The Elephant Fair. And we went on a whim 10 minutes notice, me and my two mates with a load of older lads, and we had the best time ever.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had my mate Les Fisher, an old punk, he said, you know, got to go and see the Fall and all that.
Wow.
And that was the first introduction.
Brilliant.
And then it hit the north. One of my mates was playing that in his bedroom. The 12-inch and that, and I love the line, cops can't catch criminals, and That kind of, where I was at in my life, it kind of resonated with me at the time.
Brilliant. The thing I remember about Elephant Fair, and I'm sure Jonathan Richman played, didn't he? And I can remember him crawling around the stage singing "I'm a Little Dinosaur." I'm sure I'm sure I didn't make that up. But he was on, wasn't he, Steve?
Jonathan Richman was on, yeah.
Yeah. Who else was on then? The Armoury Show, were they on? That seems to ring a bell. Lincoln Kwesi Johnson, possibly. But that was like the only festival I'd seen before that, really, was Deeply Veiled, which was completely different. That was kind of on the cusp where festivals were turning into pretty sort of slick professional things, weren't they then? Because they were ramshackle before then, I think.
Yeah, it looked good, that Deeply Veiled one.
Oh, it might have looked good from the outside. It wasn't.
It might have looked good.
Oh, it was one of them. It was feral kids and veggie burgers, and you know, it wasn't well organised. Let's put it that way. Well, mine that wasn't really Deeply Veiled. It was after it moved, wasn't it? The one I played. So the other thing I was going to ask you, Ed, you've got the one of the honours of The Fall doing a song that you wrote on your own, haven't they?
Yeah.
A couple.
I mean, you know, Mark's credited. Which one?
Rude All the Time?
Rude All the Time, yeah.
That's a Trigger Happy song, is that right?
Yeah, and the version was just upstairs in my bedroom, and I was just showing it to him, and then that Flitwick came along and said, we'll give you a couple of grand for two songs that have never been released, and there's that and Wake Up in the City, and they fucked up on the A and B side, so that became the A side.
Right.
And it was just messing about in the bedroom and just recorded it. It wasn't like a thing, but yeah.
You're proper going for it though, aren't you?
Yeah, really going for it. didn't quite get it how I wanted it, but yeah, I mean, honoured, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We got on. And you know, I always say like,
if you found that, but the songs never turned out how you thought they were gonna.
No, definitely not. The only time I did was on that Wake Up in the City, and he turned up and he had his leg in plaster. He got out of a taxi, come in, and my dog was going for his foot. My dog didn't like him. Sat him down in the back room on a chair, put his leg up, and I said, "Here's the lyrics." Goes like this, he heard the tune, he said, just fucking speed it up. And and I sang a bit, and he went, right, I've got it, all right, get out. And he did it in one take, and I wrote all the lyrics for that. And he changed one, I've got glasses under my skin, you don't know how thin I've been.
Wow.
But when we did stuff like, just credited him and whatever, you know, there was a follow mind, another one. But that's exactly the same as Jerusalem, but I'd never heard Jerusalem. And believe it, I've not even... He liked me because I didn't really know much about The Fall.
Yeah, that was quite a common thing, I think, wasn't it? He liked people who weren't, you know, massive Fall fans, I think, was one of the things he looked for.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a lot of arguments, but it was always for the greater good.
Yeah.
You know how he was working.
Yeah.
And I always say, when I'm asked about your period, I always say, well, you know, you must have got on at some point. It must have been a point where it was great.
Oh, we did, yeah.
I mean, the thing about it is, and you know, you'll know yourself, people, the reason that there's more talk of that is because that's what people ask about, isn't it? They don't ask about, what about the gigs where you got in the van, everybody went, everybody played the best, it was really good and everybody enjoyed it. No, there's no story there, is there?
Yeah, that's it. And I think if he'd have behaved, I think it was all a bit of an act
in that sense
where that's what kept everyone interested. And everyone knows it was hard work when it started. You know, you'd have to have a thick skin to put up with, you know. And then when he was nice, he was, like, really nice and that, and generous and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. He used to buy me gifts and things.
Yeah.
Like, weird little things and sort of bring the book round and I fucking don't read. But he used to bring them and stuff and weird albums and that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, The Fall have always had a fucking great following, haven't they?
And yeah.
There's no other band that can touch it. You know.
No, I think that's right. I mean, like you say, I mean, it's certainly hard. It has been hard work at times, but it is that Dylan thing, isn't it? Where he'd rather be shit one night and absolutely brilliant the next than just be the same every night, you know. And I can certainly say that.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
Like you were saying there, Steve, about the songs, you know, you nip out of the studio and it'd be like, oh fucking hell, you spend hours on something, and then it'd go, it's fucking crap. Get rid of that, and then sometimes it would work, and you'd think,
yeah. Yeah,
fucking hell.
It would not be how you imagined it, or it wouldn't be like what you thought could happen to that song. But yeah, it'd work.
Yeah. That's that one we did. We talked about that before. There's a song called Winter, and it's pretty just one note all the way through. And he wiped the drums and bass and then made Stephen Carr go back in and play them again, but without a click track. So they just had to try and keep up. And everybody said, well, this is just the stupidest idea I've ever heard in my life. That's never going to work. But you hear it now, and it's like, wow, that's just bizarre. And it works because the song's about the fact that time doesn't work properly. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that where, fair play, I'd never thought of stuff like that in a million years. I don't think anybody would, except Mark.
Yeah.
But it's hard work. Like you say, you can't always see it, can you, at the time?
No, he had an eye for it. And, he, you know, he's always working. When we was like, you know, he'd be on the phone saying, right, you know, he hated days off.
Yeah.
We never got to have an holiday. He wanted to come on holiday with me and my kids and his mum. And it never happened. It nearly, just before he died, but I was living in Blackpool. I got an house just to write some stuff, supposedly with my band, but they didn't fucking come. And did that severance, but he was going to come. He'd never, you know, he's like, I've never, you know what it is, when you go all these places, you never get to see him.
Yeah. No, not at all. So he was, that was when he was really ill, was it?
Yeah, just before, yeah. It was difficult times at the end and that, seeing him so ill and stuff.
But, you know, he carried it on, didn't he? He kept going. You got to give it.
He did, right to the end, you know, and credit to the band.
No, I think that's right. Is it like you say, even like 2000, he did really well to build it all back up again and get that band together and keep it all going.
Yeah. And we had some really good times, you know what I mean? And he never came out with the band when we was out in America and stuff,
yeah.
Which is probably a good thing. And he'd say, nah, you know, I've fucking done it. You go out with him and that, look after him and yeah. Stuff. And he was professional about it and that, you know, it was me turning.
You toured America, did you, with them, yeah?
Yeah. The best one was 2000 because... He'd not played for years since it all went tits up, I think, and he got nicked and that. It was that long. And 2001, yeah. And it was really good because it was 10, 11 weeks after the towers had fell.
Right.
So no bands was going. The flights was dirt cheap and we flew everywhere and we had no equipment. I tried out for the support band we could use there. And so some of them had sold more records than the Fall and it's like, fucking hell, I'd never heard of them. But they had some great gear, the bands were buzzing and that. Right. And that helped because we were flying everywhere and we didn't have all, you know, it's like lucky gear about.
Oh, yeah. Some of them drives in America are just brutal, aren't they?
Yeah. And then the other one, I just thought like 2004 or something like that. I came out after it. He said, you come out in 2 weeks. And he was in a wheelchair. And I said, don't do it. You know what I mean? Don't do it. You don't have to do it. He had some money. On something else had given him, but he said, no, I'm going to do it, you know, and he had fucking blood coming out of his leg and that at the time, staples in his hip.
Yeah.
But when I got there, he said, these lot are taking the piss. He said, you know, I've been stuck in my fucking room and that, you know, I can't get on the stage in my wheelchair. You know the way he talked things up and that. But it was true, you know, when I got there, I thought, fucking, that's a bit of a mess. So we just did a few more shows. And then when it comes across in the desert, I said, right, sack it. You need to go home now.
Yeah.
And it was a thing to do. I don't think he'd have been right.
No. Right. Yes, I mean, he was lucky to have you in that respect then, wasn't he? Because a lot of the time, it's a difficult tightrope, isn't it, with managing? You can't tell him what to do, but then sometimes you can't do what he says either, can you? It's a difficult job.
Yeah, well, you know, so if we did, like, have a disagreement or whatever, I walked out a few times because I thought, ah, fuck it. But then he'd come round and say, look, I'm sorry, you're right, you know, right, let's, mm-hmm. And then we'd go again, but... The band members as well. I mean, the band that you had was a bit more, you know, longer term.
Yeah.
You'd all know, grown up, you know, a lot of success and everything. Yeah. And
so what line was that?
Like, I'd been stabbed in the back, to be honest with you. I'm all right now about it because the longevity had been shone through. You know, I wasn't just there for the dough.
Yeah.
And the egos got involved and drugs and too much coke, which Mark went into. And then drinking and I had to become his drinking partner. I didn't really drink during the fall. I'm just about right now. I don't even drink now, you know. But it was kind of weird. But I look back now and I think, you know what, it was great. And
it is tough to live in that world like that and not, you know, and yeah, not drink too much and take too much or whatever.
Yeah, and I don't hold any grudges with anyone, you know what I mean? I mean, it cuts both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I can't speak for your periods, like, but the one I was in and stuff, you know, we all had a great time, and I'm sure the disgruntled ex-members of my period would hopefully say the same and appreciate what they had, because you wouldn't get that with another band.
Definitely not, no. I mean, that's kind of the reason we did this, really, because... That kind of, it's a lot easier to just talk about that. If you start writing it down and you start getting interviewed by people where they don't ask about, you know, what was it really like? They want to know about this kind of cartoon, Mark, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he couldn't have been like that all the time. It's impossible, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and it's like, he just, you know, kind of saved him in a way. You know, I mean, that's what my mates and even his mates have said, you know, but it's like, well, I had an opportunity and I took it. You know, I'm good like that, and if I get into something, and obviously it was kind of, you know, from being told, I mean, I wanted to do really well with my own band, they were really good, so it was a bit of a twist for me, a bit of an hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
So everything I wanted to achieve with my own band, I got to do with The Fall, but yeah. I wasn't the singer, but I was, you know, he always left the door, he said, you come on when you want, do what you want, play what you want, and he respected me as a writer.
Yeah, definitely.
Which was good. Like, he'd always say to everyone, you know, I want two songs off everyone.
Yeah.
But, and I always had 20, you know, and I've never stopped writing.
Yeah.
And then they'd like put that one in, and you had to like try and keep it balanced for everyone.
Yeah.
So that everyone got a fair crack and that.
Yeah.
I don't know how it worked with yous at the time.
It's in a similar way, I think. Yeah. I think.
Everybody had to rock up with something, didn't they?
Yeah. But. Yeah, similar way I don't think people realise that about Mark, that he would give everyone a chance to write songs, yeah, and yeah. He would put his lyrics over whatever it was you came, if he could, you know, whatever you came up with, he'd put his lyrics over it.
Yeah.
And he'd do his best to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to have been a part of it, you know, it really is. For me, I look back and there's never a day or something, every other day something pops up. and it's great to talk to you two because...
It was never dull, was it?
No, it's not all bad. Like I say, that they just want to talk about that side of Mark, don't they? He did this, he did that, but, you know, he's very intelligent.
He was. I mean, that was. We were talking to Grant, and he was saying like he kind of built this persona for himself, and he got a bit trapped by it a little bit. You know, where people.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
because it wasn't him, was it? That Mark E. Smith wasn't him. It wasn't. You know, like, he wouldn't go around and see his mum and talk like. You know, it was like a persona that he used, I think, and it worked. Didn't it? I mean, you know, it worked.
Yeah, well, it would have been boring, wouldn't it? If he hadn't had that and that. Some of the interviews I used to set up, and I used to think, fucking hell. No, them coming out crying, and I'd be like, oh.
He had the measure of journalists, though, didn't he? Christ, he could get them out of his little finger.
If they'd not done their own work,
yeah,
and that was it, you know, and he was good at getting them pissed, wasn't he?
all them interviews. We meet in the pub and he gets us both a pint of Alston pills and a whiskey chase. I was thinking, you're not going to last 10 minutes here, mate.
We wouldn't let them turn the tape recorder on until they were pissed.
It's good. I mean, I learned so much, you know what I mean? I learned so much and that. I didn't get it at first. It took me a while, but, you know, then I used to just think. And
It was from what I've realised since leaving, it was a one-off world to live in, yeah.
Yeah, completely. And it wasn't, you know, sometimes I had deals on the table there and I was fucking skinhead, custody of 5 kids, and I needed the money, and he used to have a different deal for me on, like, stuff, and he'd say that you can have 40%, I'd be like, fucking hell, cheers, are you sure? He'd say, yeah, you know, do that. And then with the current stuff, it was like, right, okay, solo stuff and that, he'd look after me, but he'd turn a lot down, and I'd be like, fucking hell, all you've got to do is this. And he's like, nah, I'm not doing it, you know, it's not that I'm, you know. And that was hard at the time because I thought, well, I'm trying to do my job. My job is to make money and that as well. But yeah, and then I realised that actually he's right. You know, it was probably the best thing that some of them things he turned down.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we did talk about, you know, getting you lot back together, and he was up for it. You know, he was up for it. I mean,
really?
You know,
I find that hard to believe, but.
No, you know, I had a big hand in it. I'm not going to lie, but we talked about it because there was always offers coming in of, you know, it was around that time when all the bands, the old bands, was getting back together again.
Yeah.
The original line. And they were getting big offers and stuff like that. So, he wasn't fingy to it. He was always open to anything.
That would have been an interesting conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to get, a lot of people got me wrong because I was taking the fall.
Yeah.
Like, the fall guy, and having to make that phone call, and I was like, fuck, you know, you know. Always got the shit.
Yeah.
And I'm a nice person, really. I'm like, I can handle myself, but some of the shit I got involved in and that, and that's still gone on since, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, yeah, Ed did that. No, I fucking didn't. You told me to do it.
Brilliant.
There's one time we was in Primavera, that Primavera Festival, and it was when Dingo had joined PJ Harvey, and they was playing, and we were all backstage and we had like little tents, hippie tents and that. And they were all in our dressing room. And he was like, fucking, I'm not having that. He said, fucking go in and just tell them all they've got to leave. So I went in and I said, listen, I felt like coming. And I said, look, we've all got to go. And then they all stood up and that. And then he walked right in, he went, just ignore him, take the notice.
He set you up there, didn't he?
Oh, he did it loads of times, you know. And that's one thing I'd like to say on the record, you know. I'm not as bad as the brush got painted a lot of the time. You
know? That was your job to be the bad boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, fucking hell, you know. But he was good at it. He was, you know, he was really good. He, you know, I don't know if he did it with you, but he, you know, he did play his bets on that, on who's going to have a breakdown first.
Dear me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had that, yeah.
What, did he cheat then by making him have a breakdown, or did he just wait and see what happened?
No, yeah, he'd try and push it. He used to call it the shit list, didn't we? Who's top of it? and they'd get whoever it was would get a load of grief until they
book their ideas up. All
see how far he could push them. Yeah,
he was always lighting people. I seem to remember he used to have a right go at people who did the lights. I mean, really, really tear them a new one to, like, you know, turn that fucking wheel, you know. But the people want to see you, you know, give them a break.
Yeah. I mean, one of the bits I enjoyed was I have 9 jobs, to tell you. And then, you know, then we get shoved out. You say, go and sing this. I'm not knowing the fucking words. And because of the thing of this, I'm like, I'm not doing that. Fucking go on, just do it. Just fucking. And it didn't. 9 times out of 10, it didn't go down well. You know what I mean? Not someone from behind the scenes and that singing. All right, it was one of my.
Well, that's the thing, wasn't it? Everybody there, it was there to see Mark E. Smith sing. Honestly, yeah, they really don't want to see.
He always made it exciting, though, with the little stunts and that. And, you know, it always. And like, Kieran and that, you know, they lasted quite a long time.
Yeah.
In terms of band members and stuff, and they did some good stuff, and you know, it's just a shame, isn't it? But you know, I remember
they must have been hard for them lads at the end.
To watch
must
him,
have
yeah.
Yeah.
It must have been heartbreaking.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they're trying to carry on in that with their own thing, which is great.
It is,
rather than around moping, you know.
Yeah.
He was good at winding people up, wasn't he? So, unfortunately, I've inherited some of that. And I have to clap my own head sometimes, you know, because you just come out with the same sort of humour he had, and it was sick at times, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah. I think we've all inherited a bit of that humour. Yeah, it does.
Oh, aye. Well, yeah. You had to, really, didn't you? Otherwise,
you'd be talking
shit.
What happened with you then, Steve?
We had that big fight on stage in New York.
That was it then. That was it,
yeah.
There was no way back from there, really, was there?
That tape.
There's no going back.
The videotape surfaced for that.
Yeah, it's out there, yeah. Yeah.
We was offered 20,000 quid for it.
Really?
And he said no. And I was like, fucking hell. And this was another one of them times. And he ended up giving it the BBC when they were doing that documentary.
The documentary, yeah.
We kind of fell out halfway through it. But I managed to make it.
I'd like to think I'd get my share.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought, fucking hell, 20 grand for a VHS tape. No, it's going to surface anyway.
Checks in the post.
Yeah, well, it's all over bleeding YouTube now, so you might as well have got the 20 grand.
Yeah, but that's what he was like. And, you know, I didn't understand that at the time, but, like, later on. But I didn't know that was your last thing of it.
That was my last gig, yeah. So,
and, yeah, we had some arguments, but in general, you know, we had some great times. And we were mates, first and foremost,
yeah.
Me and him.
Yeah.
And we were mates. Like, if he was down, he'd phone me up, and vice versa. He was there when I got divorced. Or if I'd fallen out with one of my girlfriends and, you know, give me good advice and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And work both ways. And a lot of people don't like hear about that.
No, you never hear about it. But I mean, you know, if someone rings you up and says, can I ask you about the fall, you know, what happened here, what I'm there, then they write the story as if it was, well, you asked the question, you know, people don't,
yeah.
Like I said,
yeah.
People don't want to know about a band that works well. And a bit more now, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's getting a bit more now. I think the fall of finally being appreciated for what they are, I think, now.
Yeah, and I think as well, I mean, you know, he used to say to me, I've seen every trick in a book, and he could see when band members were starting to wobble and stuff like that. And you know, that must have been some weight on his shoulders, 40 years of that.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would take its toll.
It's some responsibility to carry that.
Yeah, and keep going. And he did. Almost give up a couple of times. He said, you know what, I've fucking had enough. And then he'd say, hey, you're up for it. Hey, we're going to give it another push.
Yeah.
You know, real life, that and the other, and he'd come back again. But yeah, I mean, what a weight to carry.
Yeah.
And that, even though when he was acting the goat himself and then everybody else was, you know, that lineup I looked after with an usher, well, God, that was hard. You know, we pulled up in the seaside town near down hallway that way. And Jesus Christ, we opened the door and it was like a load of gorillas escaping from the zoo. And they were just off in different directions. And it's like, fucking hell. I had a rash on my face with the stress of it. And he was actually well behaved then. It was just like, fucking hell. So I thought about it and I thought, Jesus, to look after that, you know.
Yeah.
When everyone's out and that, fucking hell, unbelievable.
But
so credit to him and that, you know. And
definitely.
It's a long story, isn't it? You know, and I'm glad I was part of it for when I was, and you know, we used to have some fucking great times.
Yeah, yeah.
As well off the stage, you
I mean, at the end of the day, it's quite a badge, isn't it? Say you were in the fall. It's not like being in, you know, I was in a band for 2 years or whatever. Or the fall's slightly different, I think. And I think people realise that now.
Your periods, you know, you achieved loads, you know what I mean? It was like massive, you know, it was a different thing in the 80s and 90s, wasn't it?
It was,
completely different.
Like I say, you started making money when I left, didn't you, Steve?
What's that?
You said you started making money when I left.
Just as soon as you left, yeah.
Not because I left.
As soon as we got that handsome drummer in.
Thank you.
I always remember the really good, because we had more good times than bad.
Yeah.
And we kind of had a telepathy thing where even if we didn't speak for a month or two, we knew what was going on, but he knew I'd be there, not in a piss-taking way. I'd step in if it needed to, you know, or I'd just be totally honest with him and stuff. And he admired me for doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Which I've always done. Until lockdown.
Of course. What a strange time this must have been for, if you're, you know, gigs and what have you, they just dropped off a cliff, haven't they?
Well, we was in my band, we had three tracks to finish in Berlin, and we come back March the 5th last year. And then I tried doing the internet stuff and I couldn't do it,
right?
Sending it here and it's like, you know, but so we just, I'm not, and then now I'm thinking, I'm not even asked. It's like, you know, I just think, who wants to really buy a fucking brand new album right now? People just want to get their own lives together,
That's, you know,
and there's no rush. I'm looking more forward to next year,
yeah,
rather than rushing out. And obviously, it's hit me hard, losing. Yeah. I've got a pub outside Everton's ground, and did mobile bars and just events in general. But yeah, you know, I think there's more to life than money and stuff.
You just
got, you know, I mean, down the allotment today, that's why I was late, because I was like finishing the shed off down there. But I've been enjoying it, and it's good, and it's like, it's a bit weird. It's like, fucking hell, I'm not checking my social media, and it's like, you know, I feel miles better.
Yeah.
Janice Long's a pretty good mate, turned into a good mate with my music and that, which is good.
Really?
But yeah, I'm just not taking it so serious. And
yeah,
we all know how it is with money.
What are your plans then for the future music?
We'll finish this album and that. I've got a guy called David Scott who lives in Jordan. And so I'll just send it him, and he's really good. We get on well. And I'm probably looking for a room now in the next couple of weeks where we can just set up and just go in, and probably need to redo, record 5 songs and then put it out. Mate, who knows, you know, no rush. Like I said, I just think it's all gone tits up, and I think people have got more.
Well, and what about the Salford Festival? That was great, that festival.
Yeah, loads of people are registering again now and this and that. And I always just pull it together within a matter of a month or something. So I'm just waiting. And it's never, I'd love it to be in Beaulieu Park, but, you know, it's financially, they just don't, nobody wants to know, because it's never been a commercial festival.
Yeah.
So one of the slogans was, we ought to lose money, but we've always put on new music and had a couple of well-known acts, and it works. Engineers, photographers, all up-and-coming stuff, people get breaks. So just, we're going to sit it out this summer and then see where we're at. The guy we do it with, he's really good on tech.
Yeah.
But I'm not into the streaming thing. I just think, you know what, I think people have had enough of streaming now.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do 50-50 or something, you know. Yeah. It was good because you can get all the art. Everyone, all the big artists was fucking gasping for some air, weren't they? Like,
yeah, you know, of course.
Couldn't handle it. That's the only good thing I think about lockdown. A lot of people have had reality checks.
Yeah.
And realised the world don't just revolve around them.
Yeah.
So he was getting loads of back. Right, yep, we'll do it. And now it's keeping back to that, you know, do you know who I am? And can we have this? And we need a guarantee and stuff. It's like, well, you know, I mean, the good thing with Mark always supported it. And was all, when he didn't play, he was helping do it. And when he did play, he donated his fee. And without that, we couldn't have done it. You know, we couldn't have paid the bills.
Yeah.
So it's always been an uphill struggle, Solve Moon Festival, but I will do it again, this year.
Brilliant.
I just don't know what format. But doing it in pubs and all the clubs, not got many left in Salford, and the Lowry or whatever, it's great because you don't have any shit with the weather. And especially before COVID, I was getting loads of shit about the terrorism thing, and I thought, oh, fuck it, then we're not going to do it in a park.
Right.
We'll just do it in a pub and venues again. And now it's going to be a load of shit about health and safety with COVID.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you think about it, whether you think gigs will go on properly this year or what.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure this half capacity will work. I think you're taking away what makes a gig great, mate. When you've got 100 people stood 2 metres away from each other, it's difficult to get the atmosphere of a proper gig, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have bought tickets for, like, Parklife, for instance, 120,000 tickets, and it's like, how's that going to work? You know?
How's that going to work?
Yeah, but, like, I just think people are understanding that when they do open up a bit, it's still going to be with this condition and with that. And it's going to be a bit, hopefully not, sound like a right old fucking order, but hopefully it is going to be open, but I just, you know, for me, I'm just looking more to next year, before April, next year before we do it.
Hopefully by then, touch wood, we'll be back to normal, won't we? Christ, I hope so.
We might get playlisted on Salford City Radio. But no, we've been getting quite a bit of radio abroad, and Janice Long plays us quite a bit, which is good. And it helps, doesn't it? You get a bit of money, them checks and that, you know. You know what pisses me off? You know, when you don't pay because it's under 50 quid. And you think, just send it. We're in the middle of a pandemic, you fucker. Send it. You
know. Give us some.
I've been on £49.50 for the last 2 years.
Yeah, that old magic thing and that. But, you know, hey, just be optimistic and that. And, you know, I'm glad all my family are all right. The kids are absolutely fine.
That's what it's all about in the end, isn't it?
You know, it hit me hard. I found it hard at the start. Getting
yeah,
around
so
it.
Someone like you must have.
I went from earning £4,000 a month to living on £300 a month, and I built it up over years, and that was hard.
I bet.
And I didn't really any savings what I've had are like running low.
Yeah.
So if you know anybody who needs a DJ or help, you know, give us a shout. No, right. I'm only messing. You know, it could be worse. I think, you know.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's brilliant, Ed, and really good to talk to you.
Oh man, that's so good.
Brilliant. I'm glad you're keeping up with it all. And,
it'd be good to have a pint anyway.
Oh, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's all off. And it, you know,
definitely. Definitely.
Put that open. I'll bring one of my wrestling machines.
Right, you're on.
And
100 jam.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Thanks for joining us on Old Brother. Episodes are released every second Wednesday, so you can watch your episode 5 in 2 weeks' time. Please follow us on Twitter, at Old Brother Show, where you can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher or RSS, so you'll never have to miss an episode. While you're at it, give us a rating on iTunes or tell your friends about us. You could also check out our books, The Bid Midweek and Have a Bleeding Guess, both available from Root Publishers and all good bookstores. Hope to see you again soon, and remember, if you're driving, take your car.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.